Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Brad Harbin. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, Kyle. I'm going to go ahead and quote one of my favorite characters from a movie. It's Doc Holliday, played by Val Kilmer. And Kyle, I am rolling. Things are going really good here, starting off the new year. Great. I'm happy to be talking about fantasy football because the last few days at work, I've been just staring at a computer screen. So just the opportunity to, you know, talk some football. You know, obviously the NFL playoffs are around the corner. And we have a guest spot tonight who's joining us, and love to hear what he has to say.
Perfect transition. You're getting better at that than I am. But yes, the champion of the FPC Dynasty League we did for the podcast last year. We did the startup and made a big episode. And actually, one of the people who came on to talk about the draft was our eventual champion, Akili Alanga. Welcome, buddy.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Yeah, no, it was an awesome season. So a roller coaster ride, a lot of ups and downs. But thankfully, I was able to come out with a win in the first year. Yeah, it's awesome to be here. Can't wait.
Inaugural champ. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
So just for the people who, you know, maybe didn't listen that far back, or, you know, need a refresher anyway, because that was quite a while ago. We did talk before the season. There's a lot has happened, an entire fantasy football season. But just a brief kind of overview of the main players on your team.
So my team is, I guess we'll start. It's a super flex league. So I'll start with the quarterbacks. So my team consists of Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow. Got Josh Jacobs. I'll just go position by position. So the two quarterbacks, Josh Jacobs, Javonte Williams, Darrell Williams, who actually came in pretty clutch, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, A.J. Dillon. And then we'll take a look at the receivers. Oh, I also actually had Sony Michel as well, who also was really useful down the stretch. Super value put. For the receivers, I had Chase Claypool, Amari Cooper, A.J. Green. Who else was over here? And the rest are not so great. Sammy Watkins, Khalif Raymond, Darius Slayton, Denzel Mims. Chris Godwin, who ended up on IR. And Elijah Moore as well. Just another quarterback that I had was Jameis Winston, but he also tore up his knee, unfortunately. And then at tight end, I had Logan Thomas, who also got injured, and then Evan Ingram. So that's the championship squad right there.
I guess like the first few remarks are like you really nailed some players, certainly at quarterback and then at running back, really deep there. And the, like none of the wide receivers were huge smash performers this year. Like, I don't think any of them finished in the top 12. I believe Cooper would have been in the probably top 20. But mostly like, you know, things you got by with. And I mean, I don't know how often you played Evan Ingram. Was he just like in your lineup every week thinking if he ever blows up, it's good. If not, the rest of your lineup is good enough to win without him.
Pretty much. He was kind of there I was just trying to play the matchups between him and Logan Thomas, honestly. The only receiver that I had, Chris Godwin finished as a wide receiver one at a point per game basis. But aside from him, yeah, it was pretty rough. The tight end, definitely the weakest position on my team.
Yeah. And I mean, value wise, like Elijah Moore now, like, you know, probably the most valuable receiver you have in terms of like trade value and like market value and dynasty. So obviously that kind of exceeds like what he did production wise this year. So not to say you're not necessarily well set up going forward either. So, but yeah, the QB start Herbert and Burrow certainly is great. We can look back to the startup, Brad, unless you had any comments to make about the team.
No. Yeah. I mean that start at the quarterback spot is certainly huge and definitely something I'm envious about with my dynasty team. But I understand I guess a little bit of the frustration with Amari Cooper. I had him in a redraft league, and I mean he kept you know, kind of sledding along. It definitely had some injuries he was dealing with, but you just were kind of waiting for, you know, a blow up game in that Dallas offense that really didn't happen, except for, I mean, maybe the first game of the year. I think he had a couple touchdowns over 100 yards, but I am curious about Chase Claypool, because I know he kind of fits your just from previous you know, discussions that we've had, that he kind of fits the mold of the wide receiver that you like and strive for, and I know that you really like him. I guess kind of what are your obviously thoughts of him on your team this year? I imagine, you know, quite disappointing, but what kind of projections you have for the 2022 season for Claypool?
I'll get to Claypool in a second, but you mentioned Amari Cooper and the Dallas offense. I was heavily invested in another league in the Dallas offense. I had Zeke Pollard and CeeDee Lamb, and I got to tell you, man, they way underperformed this year. I was so disappointed.
Right? Yeah,
it was actually really, really rough to see. There were some games where Dak just, like, he started off so strong. Like, I would have expected it to all of this to happen in reverse. Dak starts off, you know, he kind of sucks. You know, the offense can't really get going, and then they kind of pick it up as the season goes along, and then somehow the opposite happened. They started off really hot and then fell off, and it just looked terrible. The offense looked terrible. They could barely keep drives going. Amari Cooper, he was also injured. Like, he's a really tough player. Actually, I love Amari Cooper. He's one of my favorite players. So he's, you know, he plays for everything. He doesn't complain. I think he's awesome in that regard, but yeah. Down here, all across the board,
right?
I think so. Going back to Chase Claypool for next season, I mean, it all depends on the quarterback. It looks like Ben's going to leave, which I think is best for all parties involved at this point. He's not really pushing the ball down the field very well, and if he does, it's not accurate. Chase Claypool has to make spectacular catches to even come down with these. He has very questionable throws. So I think he could benefit a lot from a guy that, you know, has a fresh arm. Honestly, at this point, I'd be happier with Dwayne Haskins or Mason Rudolph, just because I know they can get the ball down there. And they're not afraid to throw it downfield either. So for Chase Claypool, depending if either of those guys start, if I know that it's not likely that they get, you know, one of the big free agent quarterbacks, but I think anybody's an upgrade over Ben at this point. So I expect him to be a 1,000-yard receiver next year. 5-6 touchdowns at least. That's where I see him. I think that's pretty reasonable.
And still just now about to be entering his third year, right? So somewhat of a yes. Young core between him and Moore. And you mean, you know, you fill out the third wide receiver with a vet or, you know, whatever you need to do, like you kind of, you've got those two to kind of build around at the wide receiver position, at least long term. Sure. And I mean, the touchdown variance with Claypool is weird. Like, you think back to 2020, he had that 4 touchdown game against the Steelers.
Ridiculous.
I think that was Thanksgiving, right? I think that was Canadian Thanksgiving, not American Thanksgiving, but I remember that. I don't know if he had as many, I don't even know if he's had 4 touchdowns since that combined. Frankly, like, I think he had one this year. So it's like, it's weird how it could just, like, the touchdowns could just come and go, and it really affected him this year. So
they really are the least sticky stat. I mean, it's, yeah, you can't rely on them very much.
Except the goal line guy trying to figure that out. But yeah, we'll see.
For the goal line. Yeah. I think for the receivers, though, just to wrap up about the receivers, I think, yeah, like you said, the Claypool, Elijah Moore, those are two good guys to build around. And Chris Godwin's still 25 years old. And Amari Cooper is, what, 28, I think? So it's not like they're ancient. So I can have these guys for a little while. So yeah, I can – the window's open. I think I can try to make another run next year with these guys. I'm not too worried about these guys aging out. I think Amari Cooper, especially with this game, I think it will age well.
And I mean, Chris Godwin, and I know, again, Brad referenced, like, you have a type at wide receiver, but you also have, you've talked about it, a tendency to, you know, follow your ranking strictly. You know, if you're going to take a player in one league or you know, one over the other. You'll probably do it in another league too. You're not going to make many 50-50 coin flips. So like, you've got Godwin here, and I know you've got Godwin in a couple other spots as well. So like, just with him coming off the torn ACL, I think a bit like just as a large scale move, not just for yourself, but for the listeners as well. What do you think the approach is for Godwin this off season for managers who have Godwin on their team?
Well, the report that came out is, what is his name? Doctor, is it James Andrews? I think it is the surgeon. He does most of the surgeries.
That's the big dog. Yep.
Yeah, he's the big dog. So he said everything was really successful. Chris Godwin should, you know, make a full recovery. Obviously, you'll never know until the player starts to, you know, ramp up activity again. It sucks because it was late in the season as well. He'll probably miss the first half of the, I think they say he'll miss at least the first half of the season. So I'm not expecting anything from him next year, honestly. Maybe for the playoffs or something, but I don't know. We've seen guys come back from worse. Like Cam Akers was in a game last week and he tore his Achilles this year. So obviously advancements in medical science is moving very, very quickly. So honestly, with his work ethic, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back next year. I'd also be surprised if there were some, you know, soft tissue injuries to follow. That kind of happens with guys after, you know, after like a major injury like that. So next year, just the way I look at it for myself, if I'm building my team, I'm not going to rely on him. And with anything I get from next year is a bonus. But I expect him to make a full recovery and to be, you know, a top 12 receiver, you know, over the next 3-4 years. I think he has those skills. He's already proven, yeah, to be like, he was a number 2 overall receiver 1 year. He has it. He's incredible.
So you're, so like, I'm not giving in leagues when you have him, you're also not going to like sell low on him. Like you're going to hold until he hits that top 12 price again.
He's one of those guys that probably die on my roster, to be honest. Unless I don't like the situation he lands in, and maybe someone else likes the situation better than me. But at this point, I feel like he'll take the hometown discount. It's just the timing could be worse for him in a contract year. But I think he'll take the hometown discount, stay in Tampa Bay, and they'll try to make a push next year. I don't see Brady stopping. But no, I'm not selling low and probably not selling at all, to be honest.
I mean, that's true. I mean, you're good at the transitions. I was going to ask about like what your thoughts are about the situation, but I know you've always really liked the talent. Like if, you know, back to our Moneyballers Reality Sports Online League, you took him in the rookie draft there back in the day, right?
Took him in the third. I think it was the second round I took him. Yeah.
But like, I was high the conviction back then, right? And would maybe seem like a bit of an early pick there. You know, someone else may have taken Jeremy McNichols after or something, right? Like you know, like seems like it was definitely worth it. And you kind of spotted that back then. So you've always kind of been convicted on the talent of Chris Godwin. So it takes a lot for you to get you off of that like initial conviction. And I mean, and the results have been there to kind of prove your point, and you're sticking with that like your initial evaluation, also the production that he's had.
For sure, I trust my eyes, and obviously I look at numbers too. But you made an interesting point before how, you know, if I take a guy in one league, I'll probably take him in another league, and you're 100% right. If he falls to a place where I like him, I'll take him every time. I'm not worried. I know you like to sometimes diversify across the leagues. So you might have a share of Chris Godwin in one league, but you might say, you know what, I think I want to switch it up and go with like, I don't know, T. Higgins in another league or something, right? I don't do that. Like if I have a guy ranked above another guy, I don't care if I have 5 drafts in a row and that guy falls to me, I'm going to take him at the same spot. Like I have no issue with that. I guess the part where it kind of can, you know, come back to bite you a little bit is if you do have an injury, then you have an injury across all your leagues. But honestly, it's a risk I'm willing to take.
Risk reward, right? That's fantasy football. You got to choose how you're going to play it.
Absolutely. That's right. Every week.
All right. So now I want to move over to like the general thoughts about the startup draft. So looking back, and you know, your start really of going Herbert at 105, yeah. Burrow at 208, and maybe both were maybe viewed as earlier than what ADP expected, but. Like I'm looking at the draft board, and it might be the best pick of the first round overall, you could rival that and Josh Allen at 102. And then, you know, looking at the second round, it probably is Burrow, the best pick there. Justin Jefferson, the pick before that's probably really good value too. But outside of that, you might have had the best first and best second round pick. And again, kudos to you, because it was, I think, a big part of the anchor of your team that won the championship.
Yeah.
Oh, these guys were pretty well. Burrow had some struggles. They both had some struggles at times. They had some down games, but for the most part, they were really consistent week in and week out. And especially during the playoffs, they definitely carried me. I think if you look at the first round, I was hoping that I would, somebody would reach on a running back or a wide receiver, and then push like Kyler Murray to me somehow. But honestly, I'm not surprised with how I was. That was just wishful thinking. So I knew that I would either end up with like Justin Herbert or like, to me, I was going to be Dak Prescott. Honestly, I'm happy that it was Herbert just because he's younger and, in dynasty, that's value. Just the age is value as well. I think it was really tempting to go. It was really tempting to go like with a running back or a wide receiver, like one of those top tier guys. But honestly, I'd made that mistake in the past, and I knew for sure to start off my draft. And I mentioned this during the last podcast too. I feel so much more comfortable, and I feel like I can navigate the rest of the draft way much more comfortably if I could start off with two really good quarterbacks. So this was predetermined. I was 100% going to take two quarterbacks with my first two picks. I did not care. I needed to have two top tier guys. So I definitely, it's really important to make a plan and stick to it sometimes, because I almost took Justin Jefferson. I was very, very close, but I'm happy I didn't, honestly. I think there are so many receivers.
Jefferson went the pick right before, right? So it was kind of like the fortunate, right, like lucky that he was taken, because like when you may have been tempted to if he was on the board, right, and deviate from the QB plan.
Like I don't know what I would have done if he made it to me. that would have been, because I love Justin Jefferson, but I didn't have to make that decision, so it was actually pretty easy.
Now, I know you talked about more on the last episode, but like the hesitation certainly with Lamar Jackson, because you mentioned it, like if it wasn't going to be Herbert, it was going to be Dak, and kind of like bypassing Lamar entirely. And you talked about like the injury risk, and it certainly did get hurt this year. But you also talked about like almost disappointment that Kyler didn't fall to you. And I'm curious, like, because I know you tie a lot of the Jackson's injury risk to his running, but how do you separate that from Kyler Murray as much as you do?
For sure. For me, Kyler is a more advanced passer. I feel like he can make, not that Lamar Jackson can't throw, I just feel like he can make more accurate throws all over the field, whereas Lamar throughout his career has shown that he can make really accurate throws in the middle of the field, but not so much across, throughout the rest of the field consistently anyway. So for me, Kyler Murray was the easy pick just because of the rushing upside and because of his accuracy with the ball. I don't care about the height. He's special. He's like a Barry Sanders that can throw the ball. It's amazing what he can do. So you brought up the good point. I should have mentioned that before. With Lamar Jackson, the reason a lot of people thought Justin Herbert was a reach, that Jackson was the obvious pick. But for me, I am really worried about obviously the lack of accuracy all over the field and just how many rushes he gets every game. And just like running backs, like there's a reason those guys don't last, right? The wear and tear that comes with rushing the ball all the time is undeniable. So for me, I was really concerned with that. And I feel like the safer play was Justin Herbert. It helps a lot that Justin Herbert had an amazing rookie season. Like once I saw him play, he passed the eye test for me. So I knew, I was like, this guy, he's the real deal. There's no way he's a one hit wonder. Some people were talking about how, he would kind of regress in season two. I was not, I was very, very confident that Justin Herbert would not regress and that he would build on his rookie season. So, yeah. And honestly, the way it played out, Jackson kind of had it was kind of a fluky ankle injury. I can't say it was wear and tear. So I don't know that, my theory played out this early. I wasn't expecting the wear and tear to, affect him this early. But I feel like a few years down the road, even if he hadn't injured his ankle this year, I think I would have, regretted taking Jackson over Herbert, because I just don't see Lamar's passing improving significantly enough to rank him over Herbert or any of the other top guys. He's going to rely on his feet, and it's going to open him up to more injuries, and he's going to slow down over time, right? He's not going to be as dynamic his whole career. So, yeah.
The thing about the speed, though, I mean, you still see guys like DeSean Jackson maintain their speed. I don't know. I don't think the speed deteriorates as much as, say, the like jump ball receivers who win with their physicality. Those guys, when they slow, we saw Dez Bryant, he had an unfortunate injury at the Achilles as well. Maybe we saw it with Julio Jones, right? When the big physical guys start to wear down receiver wise, that's maybe they're the ones who really lose the edge. But the speedsters, I don't know. We still see there's some Olympic level sprinters who still make it at advanced ages at high competitions. So I'm not as convinced that he's going to slow down and be less quick far enough into his career necessarily. But I will admit that like the injury risks seem to be there. I still think it's there more with Murray than. And I'm not as convinced that Murray's that much more efficient. Certainly the Cardinals are more willing to let him pass the ball. Like the volume has been there the entirety of his career. Whereas with Jackson, they've really, and maybe, design or necessity, like the Ravens have also had a lot of winning records. They've been up in games, running a lot, not needing to pass as much either. But, I'll admit that the Cardinals certainly have allowed Murray to throw more. The volume's definitely there. But if we look at the top guys, in the startup, Mahomes, Allen, Murray were the first three picks. Just to kind of talk about Murray, I was wondering if you would change that, but would you still have those three, Mahomes, Allen, Murray, and those three and in that order? Or would now going into a 2022 startup, do you think that changes at the top of a Superflex draft?
It's a great question. Honestly, I haven't thought about that at all.
And Brad, I'll ask you too. So.
I know that Lamar for sure will still be behind those, Mahomes, Allen, Murray, Herbert for me. When it comes to Murray, I feel like the rushing upside still gives him he can win you the week. I'd still keep Murray above Herbert moving forward, going into 2022. But it's a lot closer, and I don't think other people would see it as a reach if you took Herbert over Murray. Like Brad, they did this past year.
Brad, how are you feeling at the top of the Superflex draft?
Yeah, I mean, just to go back with the Jackson comment, I just feel like in a dynasty format, I think Murray would certainly be the way to go. Just I think there's more upside. He seems safer. I know he is a little careless with the ball at times, but as far as just longevity and being safe and the weapons that that the Cardinals have, I kind of favor Murray. But going into 2022, I think those three are the same. I would possibly nudge Allen up just a little bit. I would maybe go Allen, Mahomes, Murray, and then follow that up with probably Herbert as well. So. I would probably flip flop the first two spots just because of Allen's certainly coming into his own. They won the division, and a lot of that was on him, whether it was his right arm or his ability to extend drives with his legs, power in for a touchdown. I just think he's certainly dynamic, and he could be the future of the NFL. I mean, that could be the type of quarterback that's gonna, possibly, come about as the years go on. So I would have Allen just slightly ahead of Mahomes, and then followed up with Murray. All three certainly dynamic in their own ways, and certainly have Herbert close by. Every time I hear about Justin Herbert, I get upset being down here in Jacksonville. He was certainly on our radar. Back when Bortles was fading out, but then they went and got Nick Foles, and that kind of just went away. So I'm certainly happy for Herbert. I don't really get to see him play a lot in college. I saw some highlights leading up to the draft and everything. I was like, oh wow, this kid could be special. And sure enough, he goes out to the West Coast, and 2 years later, here we are. Watching him leading your team to victory this season.
So I
sure. Mahomes, Allen over Mahomes, huh?
I can see it just slightly.
I'll see, be honest,
because you have to move quickly. Go ahead.
I think I've got Allen over Mahomes too. I think 2 years in a row where Allen's finishes the QB1, that's enough. Where I know he probably won't even repeat it as number for a third year in a row, but I think at this point the odds of him having a great season are so strong. The odds of him busting any given season are so low. It's Cam Newton-esque in his ability to score the rushing touchdowns, but he's more reliant on his arm for passing volume. So when he's not scoring touchdowns, he actually gets a better floor than what Newton would have, right? And like access to a higher ceiling in a sense too. I mean, Newton obviously has the high ceiling if he could run in the touchdowns, which he did so effectively, but there's also maybe some games where the passing volume, certainly towards the end of his career, where it is as strong. So Allen can kind of do it in so many different ways that, I think I'll go Allen over Mahomes. And I think I'm also going to go Herbert over Murray. I guess I'm maybe a little more concerned about Murray. I think to me, he and Jackson are pretty similar. I guess really the only difference I see between them is the passing volumes there for Murray, and probably like the passing offense overall, certainly like DeAndre Hopkins as a target to throw to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I what we've seen from Herbert through 2 years, that like they're so pass heavy in the red zone, where yes, the eventually maybe, so obviously they will run in some touchdowns, but the odds of it coming either through his legs or on his arm are a lot stronger. We've seen with Murray through 2 years, the Cardinals, when they find that goal line back that they like, whether it was Kenyon Drake last year or certainly James Conner this year, they'll ride that back. So Murray might not get a 5-touchdown ceiling game, whereas you kind of see that more with really Allen, Mahomes, and Herbert. So if it's a super flex startup draft for me, I'd think Murray is the 104 behind Herbert, behind Mahomes, and then behind Allen, who is, I think it'd be my QB and super flex dynasty 101.
I don't blame you for that. I still think Murray's ceiling is higher than Herbert's. When it comes to Josh Allen, I can't really dispute that. Honestly, I'm probably going to have to move him above as well, just because you have to move. Like, this is a trend. You have to hop on trends early in the NFL. Otherwise, you'll fall behind. So I'm not. This is the thing with Mahomes. I would be surprised if it came out that he has some sort of injury that he was fighting through. He's thrown so many picks this year. Just made a lot of really questionable throws. So it definitely looks like he regressed. I don't know. There could be a lot of reasons for it. I don't know why. But I don't think I don't see him getting worse. Like I fully expect him, after the offseason, if he isn't fully healthy, to get fully healthy. And if he was healthy enough, obviously everybody's not 100% in the NFL, but after the offseason, he's going to kind of regroup, and I think he's going to bounce back in a big way. But yeah, Allen number one, I there's nothing I can say. He should be number one at this point, but I think the ceiling for Murray is higher. So I think you should have him over Herbert. So honestly, I'm going to change my rankings right now. I agree with having, Allen, then Mahomes, but then I would go Murray, Herbert.
Okay, so still, even though the bias of having Herbert your team, it obviously doesn't change it. But yeah, like, so you'd still have that you know, initial call.
But that's right? The
like,
thing,
like, right? if Murray had fallen to you, like if the draft were to repeat, then like Murray falls to you at 105 and Herbert's there, you're still going Murray. Then like what you would have intended to do back when we did this startup, I guess it was in the summer.
Yes. I think, again, with the rushing ups, I still think his ceiling is higher because, like you said, he gets the passing volume, but he has there's more rushing upside with Murray. So I do think that he gives me a better chance to win.
You went between the Burrow at 208 and then Elijah Moore at 808 for making your natural pick. So you were moving a lot around in those, you know, third through eighth rounds.
When in doubt, trade back. There's so much value in trading back and accumulating picks.
So
there were a couple times where I did move up as well.
Go ahead. Yeah, sorry, so back and forth, right? Like, you know, both directions to kind of, okay, you move back to accumulate enough things. And then when it gets to a certain tier break, then you trade up to get that player when you know it before the break. Like, you kind of, it's how you best navigate the draft board is kind of be fluid and moving in both directions. But like, you move back in the third round to get, and you take Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which maybe now he'll probably lose value.
Wish I'd taken.
Yeah, thanks for that. One of the few things that I did right in this draft was taking Swift there in that fourth round. But what you just said about accumulating extra picks, you ended up with two fifth round picks and you go with Josh Jacobs and Javonte Williams. And Jacobs kind of gave you the production this year, certainly fell in drafts compared to what, you know, certainly the production has been the last few years, and he kind of maintained it and actually started catching a bit more passes at a bit higher rate.
Yes.
The passing offense evolved. So Jacobs actually production wise, great value for you. And then Javonte Williams, maybe not the production this year, but now the value is like, how high is Javonte Williams valued in Dynasty? I think it is a really good question in the running back ranks.
That's a great question, Kyle, because I've seen rankings that have him. I know a lot of people have him over Mixon. People have him over Aaron Jones. People are projecting him to be, you know, like a top five running back. You know, people are, you know, looking at trades around. People are saying, you know, the discussion starts at two first and a second. That I won't talk to you if you don't start there. So yeah, that he's if you're looking at these players like stocks, Javonte Williams. Man, he's going to the moon right now. He is, he went through. So that was value pick for sure. I like the tape a lot, so I definitely am happy with where I picked him up. But yeah, I when you see opportunity, you see value there, you have to go get it. I was really happy with those picks. Honestly, the Clyde pick, obviously, if I could do it over again, I would pick Swift. But I was convinced with the situation. I like the talent. He's not as talented as you know, the other running backs draft, a lot of the running backs drafted after him. But the situation was so good. Like, he was supposed to be the number one back on the best offense in the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a lesson for me. For a long time, I was always talent over situation. And then I realized I wasn't valuing situation enough. You know, there were times when, you know, basically you have to strike a balance. And this is one of those times where I just kind of picked wrong. I think he's going to be a solid RB2 moving forward, but DeAndre Swift has like RB1 overall upside with how many passes he can catch. Assuming you're playing in PPR anyway.
And so, yeah, I think with Javonte Williams, like in Dynasty circles, like the discussions really have, from what I've seen in all the groups I'm in, the Dynasty and Chill Pod patron group, the Dynasty Trades HQ patron group, everyone's talking like he is a top five Dynasty running back. Brad, do you think that's warranted? I mean, certainly won't be on production yet. It's obviously projected production for if he gets the work all to himself, but like, because of his age being a second year back and what we expect is
an expanded and the tackle breaking.
Yeah.
Tackle break, the forced missed tackle.
Yeah, the tackle break. Yeah. Yeah, that's a big stat that they certainly talked about. It seemed like every single time that he played, just the percentage of breaking tackles. And I mean, he certainly showed that he could shoulder the load when Gordon was out for a couple weeks there, put up, you know, very impressive numbers for a very bad offense. But I mean, where is Gordon as far as, you know, contract or anything? Is anybody,
Well, this is his last year. Okay. He's a free agent after this. I think he's an unrestricted free agent. So
yeah, honestly, the way he played, a two-year contract. Yeah,
I would be surprised if they signed him back again. To the you know, chagrin of the Javonte Williams owners.
Nice 1-2 punch. Sure,
they are great together.
They did also pay Mike Boone last year, so I do wonder now if Gordon leaves, do they also give Mike Boone extra work, right? Like, I think even if it's not Melvin Gordon, I think they're going to bring someone else in to shoulder some work. And I guess it all just depends, you know, Gervonta seems like he's efficient enough to, if he only gets, you know, 60 to 70% of the snaps and the running back workload, he'll be fine to produce what we need him to. But I think is he going to get the valuable touches? Like you don't need to get all the work if you're getting all the goal line carries and a lot of the pass catching work. The problem is he would kind of split them down the middle with Gordon, right? Like you never know who would get the touchdown week to week. I know Brad, like how many weeks were we the rankings with Gordon and Williams? Like every week we were talking about them, right? Cause you and I just couldn't agree on where they were. They'll always have one higher than the other. And you know, one of us, sometimes both of us were wrong if they'd both, you know, score the touchdown, right? Or so like it was kind of frustrating for that. So I think it's a risk if Gordon comes back, because it probably is a lot of the same type of work split. But maybe if a different back comes in, like even if it's someone that's more of a pass catching scat back, if Williams doesn't catch as many passes but he gets all the touchdown upside to himself, that's an okay situation. But I do wonder though, in general, is Williams a sell kind of at his top five dynasty our running back price?
Yes, I think he's a sell. So I think it's optimistic to think that he's going to get 70% of the touches next year. The first thing is, so part of my decision making when it comes to running backs is I want to pair them with a good quarterback.
Yes,
they don't have that. Okay, I don't know if they're going to have that anytime soon. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, like, how do we, like, the Denver, their scheme, it seems like they've always been a fan of using multiple backs. So I don't, and just the way the NFL is going, there are very, very, very few workhorse running backs. Is he capable? 100%. He is absolutely capable, and he would excel if he had all those, if he had 70%, volume share. But I think it's really optimistic. I think he's going to get 70. I think 60. It really depends, though, on who they bring in. If it's Gordon, obviously, I think they're just going to do exactly what they did last year, keep the both guys fresh and just dominate, and hopefully upgrade at quarterback, which would be good, because I think that would still boost his value if they get an upgrade there.
If they bring in a Chase Edmonds, like I know he's a free agent too with the Cardinals. If they bring in him.
Sure. Yeah, like I think to me, I don't see them bringing in just like a scat back. They'll have those guys on the roster, but I think they're going to try to get, like, if for whatever reason, like say James Conner didn't re-sign with Arizona, I think he'd be a good fit, right? A guy that can catch passes. Basically, you want two guys that can do the same thing. You want them to be a threat passing and a threat running up the middle as well, or wherever. I think that makes a lot of sense, having two guys that can do it all. That way, you know, you don't miss a beat on offense. You don't have to change your offense, which is what they did with Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon. They didn't have to change anything when either guy was in. They both pass protect. I think Gordon was better at that, but obviously that'll come with time for Javonte. But I think that's what they want.
So it doesn't telegraph it for the defense, right? Like the defense can't say, oh, this personnel grabbed this running back's in the field, they're going to run it. Or this running back's in the group, oh, we know they only like passing with him.
Exactly. So if you go even way back to, like, you know, what is it? Who are they? Monty Ball and
CJ Anderson.
What's his name? CJ Anderson, aka Baby Knees. They always had guys
and
that do it all. So
when they drafted Booker, right? It was still Anderson and Booker, right?
Like exactly
after that. So yeah.
Exactly. I think he's the sell for those reasons. Because of the terrible quarterback situation and uncertainty there, and because of Denver's historically used two backs, it seems like. Obviously when, you know. Yeah, that's what it's looked like then. That's what I see. That's why I would sell him.
All right, Brad, any final thoughts about the running backs, you know, the Achilles three, the trio he took in the third and fifth round there, Edwards-Helaire, Jacobs, Williams?
No, I mean, the Edwards-Helaire, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, you would think that he would have a productive year being in that offense, you know, just that offense, you know, projecting to do good things. But I mean, really, all in all, the Kansas City Chief offense was a little bit of a letdown. I mean, I had Kelce in a league, you know, nothing ever really, you know, happened, you know, no big booms for him. Tyreek Hill probably had more boom than Kelce did throughout the season. But yeah, I mean, I think the Jacobs thing, certainly there was a lot of people, you know, kind of hesitant with Jacobs going into the season, but he certainly proved his worth, proved that, you know, that's his backfield. It doesn't matter how much they paid Kenyon Drake to come in there. And yeah, I think the Javonte Williams, I think you're right on. I think it is the opportunity to sell. And I think a lot of it, does have to do with the quarterback play. While you were talking that, I was nodding, you know, vigorously. I mean, I think if you have a solid quarterback back there that the defense is going to respect, that's going to open up the running game even more. I mean, same vice versa. So I think, I think you're right with the 50-50 split, or, you know, 60-40, you know, they're going to have somebody in there to take snaps away from him. And I think you could certainly get some value by, you know, putting him on the block.
So you talked about Travis Kelce. Perfect, Brad, because I do want to – you got this. You're transitioning so much better than nice I am. I'm speechless because right. I could just naturally float into it. But talk about more general terms of some hits and misses and some things, lessons learned from 2021, Akili, and some things we can bring into 2022. I know for myself, one of my big misses – you know, last week, Brad, we talked about teams we did really well with and teams we did poorly right. with. And I was talking about the Fantasy Coaches League, the Charity League for the Humane Society, how my team wasn't really good at. And, you know, I talked about, like, you know, waiting so late for receiver and taking the extreme approach with fading the wide receiver position a little bit, and how that kind of backfired when you're, you know, oh, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, wide receiver 2 and 3. That's not good. but, you know, Travis Kelce in the first round. And I mean, even though that was a tight end premium league, and there's a few others where I did that. And you talk about our LU reunion league. I took Kelce in the first round there. That wasn't even a tight end premium league. And, you know, let Jonathan Taylor fall to somebody. I think that was Akili. So you're welcome, Akili.
Thank you very much.
but I think I was saying, and Brad, I think you kind of, I may have convinced you a little bit on this too, to be really aggressive on Kelce. Like I was saying, as high as 103, 104, maybe, right. And he probably wasn't worth even a first round pick. So I think a big L that I took, both giving advice, but also in drafting my teams, was drafting Kelce in the first round. So
I got
definitely no first round tight ends next year.
Yeah.
Shame on you. Shame on you both. If it was a single QB and you took a QB in the first or second round, you failed. You took a tight end in the first or second round, you failed. I've been saying this for years, Kyle. Although
I don't know if you took Josh Allen in the second round, you would have been fine last year. Like, I think that would have been
a pickoff, right? But just as a general rule, I wait on tight end and quarterback in one QB league. You have to. I think there's too much value to be had at the other positions. That's a good take. I think I saw that if you stacked somehow Mahomes and Kelce, you probably lost. You probably didn't make it very far, which is ridiculous to think about, right? Like, who was supposed to be the guy that was the first quarterback off the board? What could have been the first tight end off the board? Should have been probably. That's crazy. So that's definitely a good lesson. I think one lesson, and actually this is something that Kyle would tell me when we talk about, you know, evaluating players in the offseason. I think one of the big lessons I learned is be injury agnostic. So I faded Deebo Samuel so hard in the offseason. I was very high on him, and I drafted him over A.J. Brown. People thought that I was dumb.
Back in rookie drafts, you're talking. Back in the 2019 rookie draft.
Sorry. And this was in a rookie draft way back when. And then, you know, Deebo Flash. And he had a really, you know, and then he got injured. And people are just saying, you know, this guy's injury prone. He's not going to be anything. Brandon Ayuk is the man. Fast forward to 2021, Deebo Samuel lights the NFL on fire. So I think it's really important to just take it year by year. Don't put a guy in a box just because he did something one year. If he flashed and you believe in the talent, I think unless it's actually like a chronic thing, like the Todd Gurley knee is like the arthritis type of thing, you have to be injury agnostic and just bet on the talent. So that's that. I would have had a lot more Deebo Samuel had I believed he would be healthy all year. But in my mind, I filed him away into the injury prone category. So I think that's a lesson that I learned for sure.
And I think a lot of people faded Deebo for a lot of different reasons. Cause I mean, like I'm telling you, like I try to be injury agnostic too. And I didn't box him into the injury prone label and I still faded him though. So I think it was crowding Ayuk over me. I just think, okay, that the first round capital and, you know, Ayuk's rookie season fantasy point wise was better than Debo's. And okay, like I've seen the way that they're designing a lot of touches for Deebo, which is great, but it's also, is that the only way he can get open, where it seemed like Ayuk could win more on his own? So I was trusting more that Ayuk was the number one receiver, but really,
that was the narrative going into the offseason before. That's true. I didn't buy that particular one, but I understand why people did. That's fair.
Yeah. And so I think, it shouldn't have held against Deebo the fact that he's getting touches designed for him. Right. Like we saw how much it helped him with rushing touchdowns and just totally gave him a much higher ceiling than what he had seen before. I think like you look at his fantasy points per game through his first two seasons, he was around 10, 11. And then now what was he this year? I think it was close to 20. I believe he's the wide receiver 2 overall this year. So I think definitely again, touchdown variance. He had a lot of rushing touchdowns, which is weird for a wide receiver, but you know, for him, if they're going to design it to him, that's also something where you can maybe bank on not maybe as many rushing touchdowns this year, but still him getting some every so often too. So now the course correction is how much higher is Deebo going to go in startups and what's his value? And again, talking like Javonte Williams, less based on projection and this one based purely on production, you know, is Deebo Samuel now a sell in the offseason because his value has gone so high?
That's a great question.
Is this like Chris Godwin was wide receiver 2, and as much as he's been great, you believe in him. If you had sold a bunch of Chris Godwin shares after that 2019 season, you probably would have profited. Maybe Debo's that same thing. Like now that he's finished the wide receiver 2, he's probably never going to finish that again. Realistically, maybe he does, but I guess the tough thing there is he's probably not necessarily going to go as wide receiver 2 in dynasty startups. But
no,
he's probably going to be a third round pick.
He's top 10 for sure.
At this point,
it's tough to value him. Is he a sell? So the question is he a sell? Personally, again, I'm the guy that if I really believe in the talent and I saw it early on and they produce, I'm going to hold them on my roster. Unless somebody comes to me with a great offer or if I have a real need and, you know, I want to trade them in a package for like a top tier running back, then I might do that, or if I need a quarterback or something, but I'd rather just have him on my roster. He could help win you a week. Why would you trade that away? I feel like a lot of people in Dynasty, they fall into the trap of, he's going to hit 26, time to sell. You know what I mean? Like people are scared of the age cliff, and they talk about, better to sell a year too soon than a year too late. I just don't see it. People are obsessed with youth. I think, if you have a guy that's elite and he's shown it, like why would you move away unless you really think it's an aberration or you really think his value is going to tank? Or if his value is just overinflated, like kind of like Javonte Williams, right? He hasn't produced, but this is all people projecting. Like Kyle said, this is production. This is not projections. He did it. Wide receiver 2, I believe. I think you hold.
For sure. I think I'm holding. I think the idea is you sell off Deebo for a receiver that you perceive is similar. So another receiver that you're believing, but just hasn't gotten that production yet. So they're not as highly valued. And
yeah,
the difference of whatever you get back, like added to that other receiver, might be you get something that's maybe even close enough to, like in this case, Debo's value, that like if it's like Debo, a high enough pick and another receiver, like where the pick is almost enough to make you want to do the deal. And then the other receiver that, you know, you think over the next 2 years might have a season where he produces similar to Debo is just kind of the sure. gravy to it. Like, and it's so, but that again, it's, you know, even though he finishes the wide receiver two, he's not valued as the wide receiver two in dynasty. I mean, even Cooper Kupp, the wide receiver one, he's probably not going to go first wide receiver off the board in a dynasty startup. You might see in redrafts, he might be, and you know, in August, he might be the first one to go. But maybe, I don't know that it's going to be as cut and dry as it was like when Michael Thomas had like a similar season in 2019, where he was just, you know, he, you know, might go the 101 in drafts. Like I wonder if people are kind of understanding the variance of year to year and like the Antonio Brown of year after year being the wide receiver one, two, 3 years in a row, that like, that's the aberration, right? Like that really rarely ever happens, you know, Antonio Brown, we go back to Jerry Rice, right? Like, so, the idea, like, I think the thoughts of Kupp and Samuel probably aren't going to repeat as wide receiver one and two, but we as a dynasty community and a fantasy community know that enough that we're not going to value them there. So it's finding that mix, right? Is he still valued high enough to, and, you know, is there an expected dip in production that's low enough to where those things mesh? And there's, again, a specific player to be found. I think that's the key, right, Akili, is you're not doing it just for any random receiver. It's a receiver you believe in personally if you're going to sell Debo off one of your
teams. For sure. For sure. Like, if you think there's a guy, like, I don't know if you could, like, who maybe had it. Actually, let's go back to Chase Claypool. If you really believe in Claypool's talent and you know his value is suppressed now because of the bad season, the bad offense, and all the question marks, but you believe in him long term. I mean, this is a dynasty. He's really, I think he's like 22. So right. you could go to the Claypool owner. You could get Claypool and and a couple of picks probably, or like
Claypool and like interesting. Like, I'll take your team in dynasty. Could you go Claypool and Jacobs to get Debo?
Claypool and Jacobs? Oh, yeah. I can't with the RB scarcity. I love Josh Jacobs. He's still young. He's had 1,000 yards.
So let's do the opposite. If you have as a Debo manager, and you come to that with that price, like, sure. Like Jacobs and Claypool, is that enough to move off of Debo's? Like, is that what you're looking for in terms of type of return? If you can't get the, let's say, like the a high enough pick,
I think that's pretty. I think that's a pretty good return. I feel like there'd have to be some other pieces in there, but that's definitely fair value for Debo. If you can get that if I was offered that for Debo Samuel, I would 100% take that.
Okay, so you're absolutely thinking more on the Jacobs side. Like, you'd almost expect something like added to the Debo side. Like, you wouldn't want to give up Jacobs for that, like the running back.
Oh, sorry. I think I meant Jacobs and Claypool.
Yeah, no, that is what I meant. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. Well, for both of them, yeah, I'd feel like I'd need to bounce that out a little bit with something on the Debo side, because that's a lot. Jacobs is a great player. I'm high on him. I'm also high on Claypool. So this is these are my guys, Kyle.
That's true.
That I like a lot.
But I wonder though, like if that's attainable, the Debo manager probably looks at that as it being enough, right? Like that, like if that's
right.
Again, like, if you are the Debo manager, like that seems like that's a attainable in terms of a haul you could get. It doesn't have to be Jacobs, doesn't have to be Claypool, but like threshold, like a receiver and a running back that kind of meet those production thresholds.
Yeah.
You know, as a D, you know, if you're selling Debo, and maybe you have to throw a second or a third in as a pick to kind of balance that out, but that type of trade might be there.
I think a second, and that's pretty close. If you plug that into a calculator, I bet you that's close. Jacobs and Claypool for Debo in a second.
Guess what? There's NFL playoffs happening, folks. So, like, imagine all that. Wild card weekends here, and with the seven playoff teams in each conference, there's only one team per conference with a bye. So we get six playoff games this weekend. It was the same format last year, but it's it's a great thing to have to get used to, right? Having those two extra games than what we were accustomed to before.
Oh, I'm hyped. This is going to be great. This is fantastic matchups.
Yeah.
I love that. honestly, as much as like I'm a huge Steelers fan, I think they're going to get stomped by the Chiefs. At least they should.
Let's just quickly cover the matchups for the listeners. Perfect. Great place to start with, right? In the AFC, the 2-seed Chiefs hosting the 7-seed Steelers.
Oh, man. Epic way to get into the playoffs, man. I'm so happy the Steelers got it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And then you've got
From Jackson.
It's funny. There's actually.
Yes. Shout out
to the Jaguars.
Shout out to Carson Wentz, man. Thanks, man. I appreciate you. You're awesome.
We tried.
Clearly, the Jags did. I don't know if the Colts did, but yeah.
No, they did not.
I think Carson was trying, man. I think he was. Anyway.
It's funny because there are two divisional games, like two divisional rival matchups in the playoffs this week in Wild Card Weekend. One of them is the 3-seed Bills taking on the 6-seed Patriots again in the AFC side.
Huge, huge game.
Mm-hmm. And then two teams that have a long drought without playoff wins. I mean, it's a playoff game, so it can't end in a tie, right? This Raiders game can't end in a tie, right?
I don't think
because the last one didn't either. But Bengals hosting the Raiders, and I mean, it was 2002 for the Raiders since their last playoff win. I think it's into the 90s for the Bengals, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I mean, I certainly have some interest in this. I think it's the one that's actually kicking off the weekend, if I remember right, on Saturday, this game. But
I believe so. I think Saturday, Brad, if I remember correctly, Saturday, it's that game. And then the Patriots-Bills for the Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Saturday's going to be great. I know we have some family coming in town, but I'll have that TV on and trying to keep the remote away from the kids.
Funny, my wife has a friend coming over. It's kind of like family. So it's the same thing. It's my turn with the TV, though. I want football.
You have to come.
Absolutely.
But quickly, the NFC side. So, the Titans are on bye, by the way. That's good. They got the one seed in the AFC. The Green Bay Packers have the number one seed in the NFC. I said that a lot in the last Packers pod.
There you go.
Did I hear a boo? What is this? Get out of here. No. Yeah, it's okay. Hey, your team made it. Why aren't you in a good mood? So Packers 1-seed, the 2-seed Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the 7-seed Philadelphia Eagles. Then 6-seed Dallas Cowboys against the 3-seed Dallas Cowboys against the 6-seed 49ers. Although kind of revealing myself, I think the upset's happening there, I guess. I think in the 49ers are higher. And then the other divisional rival game, the Cardinals traveling to LA to take on the NFC West champion Rams. Oh, this is one of those where there's three NFC West teams. So if you want to be the best NFC West team, you got to go furthest in the playoffs. So, I mean, if the Rams are NFC West champs and then lose to an NFC West champ in the first round of the playoffs, I don't really think they're NFC West champs. At Full Press Coverage, the old Colts managing editor, when the Texans won the division, but the Colts beat them in the wild card round, called it the real AFC South champ Colts for that whole offseason.
There you go.
Yep.
But yeah, I think do either of you want to give general thoughts on any of these playoff games, Brad or Achille?
Yeah, I will real quick. I'm in addition to the Bengals Raiders game, obviously the Bills Patriots is gonna be huge. I'm hoping there's gonna be some weather involved for the nightcap, but I'm very excited to see the 49ers and Cowboys kind of renew their 90s rivalry. I think this is I think it's two teams that are kind of heading in different directions. I mean, sure, the Cowboys put up some points last week against the second stringers for the Eagles, but I don't think they're going to be ready for what San Francisco is going to bring in there. And I'm with you, Kyle. I mean, I'm liking the Niners to take down Dallas in the first round here and go from there. The other ones, I mean, I like the Bucs to take care of business over the Eagles. Eagles could put up some fight. Buccaneers are certainly dealing with some injuries, which could impact the game a little bit. And then out west, I'm anxious to see if Matthew Stafford can do something. I mean, he spent all those years in Detroit. I think did he win only one or none. Didn't win any. A big goose egg. I figured
he and Kyler Murray have the same number of playoff wins. Yeah, so they're both looking for their first, which that's a really interesting dynamic between those two quarterbacks.
Wow. That is interesting. So yeah, I mean, yeah, whoever's going to come out there will certainly, you know, kind of, you know, set their place for next week. And it could be a battle. They certainly had a couple games this season that have been, you know, both, you know, at times, you know, the defense would take over on either side, but obviously they're both offensive driven, two young coaches, two, you know, brilliant minds to move the ball down the field. So, yeah, I mean, what a great weekend.
It's funny. We talk about, you know, the 4-5 matchup, you know, Stafford, Murray, both looking for first playoff wins. 4-5 matchup in the AFC side, Joe Burrow, Derek Carr, both looking for their first playoff wins. Actually, both of them playing their first playoff games. So I think those are just interesting storylines there on the 4-5 side. Akili, do you have any thoughts about these playoff games?
Actually, it was kind of what you just mentioned. I'm really excited to see what Joe Burrow can do. How he acts under pressure. One of the best things about Joe Burrow is he doesn't shy away in those big games. He tends to excel in those. He's used to winning and he expects to win. So I can't wait to see that. As much as, you know, AFC North, you know, hate the Bengals, but big fan. I think the AFC North has a super bright future. I still think it's the best division in football. Fight me. So that'll be a fun one. I think the Bengals will tear up the Raiders, personally. So Buccaneers should destroy the Eagles. Chiefs Steelers. This is going to be bittersweet. I love watching my team play. I love watching the Chiefs play. The Chiefs defense has been playing great. I think they're going to give Ben fits, and I think they're going to stomp them. But at the same time, I still have a sliver of hope that Ben will, you know, channel his, you know, his inner, well, his 10-year younger self and just bring it. It'd be amazing. I'd love for them to win somehow and win a Super Bowl. It'd be great if we could get a Packers rematch to handle that business before he retires.
I also agree. I'd be hopeful the Packers made it. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. For the NFC side, yeah, 49ers Cowboys looks to be a great matchup. I think the 49ers should win, but I think it's going to be a close game. Cowboys have a solid defense and some big playmakers on defense. That's going to be a really fun game to watch. I don't know if Jimmy G, he threw two picks last week. I think that thumb obviously is going to be a huge factor. I have a feeling you might see some Trey Lance in this game too, which is kind of scary for 49ers, but it'll be fun for us to watch. Yeah, Bills Patriots. I think that's the biggest game. Can the Patriots kind of, you know, once they lost Tom Brady, the whole, I guess, the aura surrounding them, that kind of aura of invincibility, that Patriot kind of left, and they kind of recaptured some of that this year with McCorkle Jones. So I think this is huge. I think if the Patriots can beat the Bills, I feel like they kind of gain some of that back, that kind of that invincibility aura that they used to have all the time with Tom.
Can you say that Mac uncorked it for them and now they can drink from that invincibility cup or whatever?
Something like that. But yeah, for sure. McCorkle definitely uncorked it. And who knows what they can do. That defense is wicked. And then finally, this game should be fireworks. Cardinals, Rams. Enough said. That's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for this weekend. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. In terms of my personal predictions, I've got all the home teams winning except both of the three seeds. I think the Patriots upset the Bills and the 49ers quote unquote upset the Cowboys, but it seems like everyone's picking the 49ers to beat the Cowboys. So not sure how much of an upset that is.
No. Okay. Well, so you got, okay. So I'm going for sure. Bengals, Bucks, Chiefs, Bills, 49ers. And I'm undecided on the Cardinals and Rams. to me, that's so close. But
yeah, I'm leaning Rams. I think it depends on the coaching.
Stafford plays.
I think it just comes down to coaching straight up. I think McVay knows what he's doing. Cliff Kingsbury, his first playoff game, is he going to put that team in the best position to succeed? I don't think so. I almost wonder if McVay almost shields Stafford a little bit like he used to do with Goff. Maybe he knows he's gotten to a Super Bowl doing that before. So maybe he channels that a little bit. I don't know. My whole point is, I don't think McVay is going to lose this to Kingsbury. I think that's kind of the edge I'm taking in terms of the Rams, but I admit that it is really close. I mean, the 4-5 seed, right? It's generally the closest, or the best wild card team versus the worst division winner. But speaking of divisions, Akili, I still got to say though, NFC West sent three teams to the playoffs. It's really tough to say any other division is better than that one. You know, all due respect to your AFC North.
Baker Mayfield. The Ravens made some really questionable, like, 2-point conversion calls when they could have tied the game.
I remember one of those, the Packers game. I know.
There were some games they should have won, okay? They should probably be in the playoffs. But listen, the Ravens are a great team. The Bengals are great. The Steelers, you know, kind of getting in their own way, but they're still a great team. The defense is really solid, and the offense is, I guess, kind of dysfunctional, but they have their moments. And then you have the Browns. You know what? Baker's injured, but I do think he's a very average quarterback. I think they're going to be replacing him sooner than later. And if they stick with them long term, then they're committed to mediocrity. That's fine. I'm okay with that. It'll give us some. If we get to go against Baker two times a year for the next, you know, 8-10 years, then so be it. I'll take that. But you're right. Like, it's tough to argue against three playoff teams. I'm making an emotional argument, not a logical one.
I do like that, like the loyalty and the resilience to the AFC North, though. I admire and respect that.
True North, strong and free.
The Canada North. That's there's no North division in the CFL. I guess it's Edmonton.
That'd be rough. Yeah.
Can we get
Rough Riders? I guess Saskatchewan. That'd be rough. That's a good joke, Brad.
Like, the Bills are great to root for because they're close to us, whatever. But can we get a team in Canada? Can we get a Toronto team?
No, please no. I again, that's a selfish / like really loves the CFL as a Canadian, so that's not so much selfish. But yeah, that's, I don't know. I feel like that's not a good. That's not good for the CFL if a Canadian team ends up in, like, an NFL team ends up in Canada. So I'm firmly against it, to be honest.
Oh,
so.
That's right. You are a big CFL guy. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I understand.
But yeah, but CFL fantasy. I love doing that, the DFS stuff. But I think with talking this playoffs, let's talk a bit fantasy, or not fantasy playoffs, NFL playoffs for fantasy football. Okay. I know there's a few sites. Underdog has some. I believe there's like FFPC and like some high stakes playoff challenges. I know what I've done on the show, we did this last year, NFL.com playoff challenge, and that's kind of an interesting format. So every week you pick a team, one quarterback, two running backs, two wide receiver, tight end, kicker, defense. And again, you could each week you can select the same team or, you know, new teams. Obviously, if you have eliminated players, you don't really have a choice but to take new players. But every week that you keep a player, they get extra bonuses for scoring. So if you keep a player 2 weeks in a row, that second week they get times two bonus. If you keep them 3 weeks in a row, times three. And if keep them times four. So if you pick a player and that team goes to the Super Bowl and you have them every week, you get times four bonus in the Super Bowl. So it's interesting to kind of, okay, it's, you know, 4 weeks and it is a weekly contest, but there are decisions to make that will affect multiple weeks that could be really large and impactful. So it's the balance of, you know, you want players going as far as possible to get as many bonuses, but you also want to maximize scoring. So it's always kind of fun. I always like games like that where it's not so obvious to go one path, extreme or the other. And I really enjoyed playing those challenges before. I know, Brad, you've joined in. Akili, you and I have been doing that for a few years now, even if it was back in the day, just you versus me. But yeah, expanded kind of just the pool of players, other fantasy managers to kind of choose from. So I always enjoy this. I'm going to have fun. And I've kind of already kind of come up with a few things. And I know, yeah. So any quick comments before I kind of talk strategy on all that?
Honestly, I haven't really had a chance to look at mine. I'll be doing that in the next couple of days. But I can tell you what I've done in the past is I'm trying to pick. I'm trying to guess which team is going to go to the Super Bowl, and I'm not diversifying. I'm loading up on that team as much as I can.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick a team from each division, each conference, and I'm gonna try to pick the Super Bowl participants, and hopefully, you know, get that 4x bonus.
There you go. Yeah. No. So that makes sense as far as the bonus and everything, because I saw where like Aaron Rodgers was available. Obviously, he's not playing this week, but if you roster him this week and you play him next week, you would get the double. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. The guys on bye, they're the only ones guaranteed to get the times too, because you know they're playing next week.
Gotcha.
Now again, you know, Chiefs and Bucks, if we think they're going to blow out the other teams, are they guarantees? Like, do we view them as the same type of guarantee, but with getting also scoring week one and not having zeros? So it's again back to that dynamic.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, this is my first time. So I'd love to hear some strategies.
So mine, what I've kind of approached in multiple years, and I think this helps more for if you're in a pool of like whatever it's going to be this year, you know, have, and if frankly, if anyone does want to join, feel free to DM me on Twitter at Senator Says, the podcast account at FPC_fantasy pod. If you want to join our full press fantasy pod playoff challenge, I'd gladly have any listeners in. So DM and I'll send some invites out. But yeah, I think however many people we come with, I want to win the big contest, but I also, if you put me in this group and say this is the group people, I want to be first in that group. So that tends to be my priority. I want to kind of play this to beat, well, you, Akili, and you, Brad, and everyone else, any of the listeners join, yeah, anyone else that's on. So I kind of try and play it. I try and predict the final four. I want as many players playing on Championship Sunday as possible from my lineup week one. It's not the times four. I want as many times three bonuses as possible, thinking if I can set myself up to be ahead of everyone else going into the Super Bowl, it'd be really difficult. Like, I'll have all the leverage. Everyone will kind of have to guess what I'm doing and play opposite to me. So to me, I'm trying to win it by Championship Sunday, is kind of put pressure for that week. So I kind of go about it and I set the lineup up to what's a realistic and possible final four scenario. Cause you don't want you. I think one of the things to first avoid is, especially for the first week, pick one team or the other. You don't want to stack games at all. Cause I think the worst thing you can do is guarantee yourself having to repick a player. Like, I know that I am for sure. Like if you get a player, like let's say you go with a Bengals player and a Raiders player, right? Like, you really like Josh Jacobs, thinks you can exploit him against the Bengals run defense, but you also want Jamar Chase. I feel like that's an inefficient way to go about it, and maybe the worst way to go about it, because you know you have to replace one of them. I want to set myself up where it's possible that my entire team gets through week one and everyone on my team gets a times two bonus. I mean, again, I want to guarantee it that if I can, my entire team gets a times three bonus that Championship Sunday. So I kind of go about and looking at it that way. But I also do want to kind of have a bit of leverage and edge on the big, because part of it is you enter your group, but your lineup's also submitted for the whole. And that's where you can like actually win like legit prizes and things like that. But you've got to be like the one percentile to even come close to the prize pool, right? So, and you know, what you see a lot of that is what Akili's saying is you basically take the two teams you think are going to make it and just pick from those two teams. So what I do to kind of leverage off of that is I try and go for the low percentage chances. What are the teams or you know, maybe go with a chalk player. And I think one of the things that it shows is like the rostership currently on certain teams. So for this tournament, I've kind of got two builds that I'm thinking of. And I'm looking at the quarterbacks, and in terms of the most rostered player, it was Mahomes by quite a bit. Travis Kelce at like 61%. Wide receiver, it's Devontae Adams, about 50%. But then running back, there's no obvious pick at running back. But what I wanted to do is at quarterback, especially steer clear of Mahomes, just because I think it was closing on 60% of people were taking Mahomes, something like that. Or it was over 50 last time I checked, but whatever it is, it just seemed like it's too much of a popular strategy. And I get, looks like they'll probably beat the Steelers and you get that times two bonus, but I want to leverage off the majority and either build through Tom Brady or through Joe Burrow. And part of what also influenced my decision was I didn't do a goal line guide for the playoffs, but I did kind of calculate the team's goal line grades like I would in the regular season with the goal line guide. And the two best passing grades were the Bengals and Buccaneers. So part of me wants to kind of build through either of them. So the idea is if I'm taking Brady, I want to stack with Mike Evans. If I'm taking Burrow, I want to stack with Ja'Marr Chase. And I'm looking at their percentages. Brady, his rostership was 18%. Burrow was only down at 8%. So not someone who's very highly picked in this contest. And I kind of liked that. Mike Evans, 16%, Ja'Marr Chase, 23%. So a little more with Chase, but like 23% of Chase, but a lot of more than half of the people don't have Burrow stacked. So it'd be one where if I'm going to go Chase, it's probably because I'm stacking with Burrow. I don't want to take him without Burrow, because that's something where not a lot of people have the Chase stack, at least less than the majority of the people who are taking Chase. So that's when I kind of look at, where is he like 16% of Evans, but 18% of Brady. So like, if you've got Evans, it's likely everyone has Brady going with it. So there's less of a leverage there. So just even saying that, I'm kind of almost talking myself into that Bengals lineup more, but I think the tight end is interesting because I think Kelsey is definitely worth it. It's one of those where I think we talked about this last year, Akili, like in our group, I think everyone took Kelsey. Like it was one of those where you assumed everyone was taking it, so you took it just because you had to keep up. And I mean, Kelsey ran to the Super Bowl. So you have 5x4 bonus everywhere. Right. So like, it's one of those where if you're not in the Kelsey club, you're probably missing out unless you have Gronk though. Cause that's the one where that could be the difference maker. 61% of people have Kelsey, but only 17% have Gronk. Right. Mm. So, and the way I'm kind of thinking about it though, there is kind of a risk that the Bengals play the Chiefs in the second round. So I wouldn't want to go Kelsey with the Burrow Chase stack. I'd rather go Brady, Evans, Kelsey, and Burrow Chase Gronk, not playing Gronk with Brady and Evans, but instead playing Gronk as a way to get the Buck passing game in that lineup with the Burrow Chase stack. And frankly, the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of talking myself into that's the direction I want to go in. Just again, because Burrow at that 8% owned, it's very tempting to go with that. I think on that particular lineup, I like going Davante Adams. I think one of the things I want to do though is I want to mostly avoid the Titans and Packers. I want to maximize the points and not take a zero in too many spots. So I think what I'm going to do is a wide receiver, one of the wide receiver spots, either for Davante Adams or for AJ Brown. And it's really tempting to go with Brown because when I checked, he was only at 5% rostership. A lot more people are taking Henry. And I think that's a great leverage playoff of that. Whereas again, Adams at 50%, he's the most rostered wide receiver, but it's one of those, like every week the Packers advance, he's probably scoring a touchdown. To me, this is the Kelsey chalk from last year. Like he's guaranteed the times two. And okay, if you get those 3 weeks where he gets to the Super Bowl, the amount of touchdowns you're getting and getting constant bonuses every time, I think makes it worth it. And that's so many people think that, which is why we're going to 50% there. But that's kind of the way I'm thinking. So at least receiver wise, again, either going, I'm thinking Brady, Evans, Brown, Kelsey is one. And then the other lineup is Burrow, Chase, Adams, Gronk. It's kind of, That Burrow Chase lineup, there's not a lot of chalk there. Again, Chase at 23%, a little more, but I feel like I can afford to go Adams. And then my two plays at running back are kind of to go with those upsets. I've mentioned I like the 49ers and the Patriots to win their games. And so I'm really tempted to go with a RB combination of Elijah Mitchell and Damian Harris. I may not go with both. I might take just one and then go maybe with a more chalky running back. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like going in with both of those. I've noticed Elijah Mitchell at 5% rostership, Damian Harris at 4%. I thought that was incredibly low. So So that's kind of my strategy going into this playoff challenge. And I've obviously revealed my strategy to Brad and Akili. So you guys are welcome for having that bit of advantage and conveniently didn't check before this episode. So they can't share their strategy with me. But you know, I do what I can for the listeners. Right. So hoping that helping the listeners out, even though I'm you know, well, and now that Brad and Akili know my strategy, it's up to them to beat me. Right. So, there it goes.
Exactly. I actually had made a lineup as you were talking. Right. I'm pretty much going all one team. I'll tell you exactly what I did. All right. I picked a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver, a kicker, and a defense on a team that I think is going to win the Super Bowl. The other running back and the other wide receiver are from the team I think is going to make the Super Bowl on the other, in the other conference, but that I don't think will win. And then I have Kelce at tight end. So there you go.
Oh, Kelce at tight end. So the Chiefs aren't one of those teams where you're stacking.
I'm not currently stacking Chiefs, no.
Okay, so you've got three teams represented in your lineup with Kelce just being the lone exception and the other two teams.
Kelce, yes. And then the rest is spread out between two teams.
Interesting. So I know Brad, I guess, maybe on next week, we can kind of go through your lineup and what you ultimately decided to do going into the after week one. For now, I'm curious to what you'll eventually take. But that's definitely something we can talk about your strategy on the next one, since I've kind of outlined mine. If my guys get through, then it's easy. I just keep them. If not, then I might talk about my entire lineup got eliminated, so this is what I'm doing now. looking forward to that next week.
Yeah. This is sounds like a lot of fun, and yeah, I got some homework to do, and I'll be happy to share it next week. Sounds good.
So Akili, also really appreciated this again. Our FPC Dynasty champion on the podcast league. So congratulations for that, for getting the win in year one, and thanks for sharing the insights again on your team, the draft philosophies, and some lesson learned from 2021. And best of luck in 2022.
Thanks for having me. It was great. I enjoyed talking to you guys. It's always fun. We always get some good discussions going, and it's good to get insight from you all, because it helps me. Hopefully my insights help you guys as well, and that's a huge part of the game that I really enjoy. It's the social aspect to it. It's good. Dynasty brings people together. Fantasy football in general brings people together.
Absolutely. Happy
for this sport together. It's awesome.
All right. And I think again, Dynasty talk will continue all throughout the offseason. As you can tell, we've already started here. We'll keep talking about the NFL playoffs as they happen. But once the NFL playoffs are done, we're still here on the Full Press Fantasy Pod, and you can follow us along year round. I already referenced the Twitter handle earlier, but I'll say it again, at @FPC_FantasyPod. Also, you can follow your co-hosts individually. Brad's at @TheRundown_BH. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app. It's available for free on Android and iOS stores. Gives you access to all the great written content at Full Press Coverage, also the podcast, and of course, access the Full Press Radio Network. So again, download the Full Press Coverage app for free today. Also, shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at @PA_IIOfficial. He lets us use the song Melody as our intro and outro music, so appreciate PA for that. Appreciate Akili, you for dropping by and dropping knowledge. I always love talking with you.
Always a pleasure, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Brad. Listeners before we head out?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just hoping that I could put both you and Akili down as references as I interview for the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach position. I got that coming up on Friday. I was hoping for GM, but they haven't let him go yet. But I'm going to put you guys down, so expect a call.
No, are you wearing a clown mask to the interview?
I am not.
It's not a prerequisite.
I'm not. No.
That's not
no.
The good first impression you want.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to go over well with the owner.
Well, I mean, I don't think he could be any worse than the last guy.
That is correct. Yep.
And I do sincerely mean that. That is not facetious at all.
Swing and a miss on that one. Yeah. No, I hear you. Swing and a miss.
I would definitely have more faith. Brad Harbin with his. I know you haven't had any NFL coaching experience, but I assume you don't have any football coaching experience either.
No, not really.
You play fantasy football. I think you're more qualified than Urban Meyer. So I take you. I feel like you wouldn't ruin Trevor Lawrence too much.
Yeah, I agree. Trevor's my boy, so
all right, and keep riding on listening to us here on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.